Take my pick, huh? Okay, I choose Psalm 6. Good morning. No, Lord, don't punish me in the heat of your anger. Pity me, O Lord, for I am weak. Heal me, for my body is sick, and I am upset and disturbed. My mind is filled with apprehension and with gloom. Oh, restore me soon. Come, O Lord, and make me well. In your kindness, save me. For if I die, I cannot give you glory by praising you before my friends. I am worn out with pain. Every night my pillow is wet with tears. My eyes are growing old and dim with grief because of all my enemies. Go, leave me now, you men of evil deeds, for the Lord has heard my weeping and my pleading. He will answer all my prayers. All my enemies shall be suddenly dishonored, terror-stricken, and disgraced. God will turn them back in shame. The word of the Lord.
Amen.
All right. I just want to start with a story of a New Yorker who he was traveling through Texas, unfamiliar territory, and unfortunately, as he was driving, he hit another car, and the car happened to be, it was a truck, really, the truck happened to be carrying a horse. So a couple months later, this New Yorker is at his home, and he decides to call the insurance company, make a claim, and get some money out of this deal. So he does, and the guy on the other end of the phone says, "We talked to you a couple weeks ago after the accident, and you said you were fine. What has changed?" And this New Yorker says, "Listen, actually, I was very much injured. I was writhing on the ground in pain. I was going to say something, but then I heard a woman say, 'Look, the horse broke his leg.' So the next thing I know, this Texas Ranger comes out with a shotgun, shoots the horse, puts him out of his misery. And then he points at me and says, 'Hey, are you okay?'" Wait for it. Well, that's one way of dealing with pain. C.S. Lewis, one of my literary heroes, who I'm going to probably talk about him a couple times today, he wrote a little book called The Problem of Pain. Anyone read that one? The nutshell is this, and he's wrestling with this as we do as well. If God were a loving God, then all his creatures, meaning us, would be perfectly happy. And if God were all-powerful, he could do whatever he wants. But as you and I both know, all you have to do is go outside for a minute, not all of his creatures are perfectly happy. So what does that mean? That either means God lacks goodness, he lacks power, or maybe he lacks both. So that's essentially the problem of pain. And then one of the questions that at least I get from reading a book like that is, how can we attribute creation to a benevolent creator? You think about it. And I don't have a textbook answer for that. I don't think you do either. But it makes you think. And when we look at David, who, now you talk about a guy, a roller coaster of emotions. David did so many great things, but he also did a lot of things that make you go, right? That whole Bathsheba incident. All right. David dealt with a lot of physical and emotional adversity, which is really the background of the sixth psalm. We don't know exactly what the situation is, but we know he was illing, he wasn't feeling particularly good, and he was in pain. David was a man who wrestled with God. And if you're wrestling with God, let me say, that's a good thing. And you say, well, why is that a good thing? Look, if you're wrestling with God, what does that mean? You're in contact with him, right? You're in touch with God. And I don't think there's any more realistic type of a relationship you could have with your father than at least being in contact with him. The sixth psalm, let's get to it, is likely a song. And it is a song that is full of all kinds of emotions. There's fear, there's confusion, a little bit of despair and melancholy thrown in, some anguish. And then kind of toward the end of the psalm, David changes his tone a little bit, which is why I like this one. The key point, if we really did a deep dive, and I know we won't today, is that the Lord is both David's problem and his solution. So it's almost blasphemy to think that. So let's just quickly go through some of these verses. The first, right off the bat, he's not making excuses. He's just getting right into it. Lord, do not rebuke me in your anger or discipline me in your wrath. I think we all know that God's a lot of things. We can describe him in many ways, but it's a God who can get vengeful, right? We see that every now and again in the Old Testament. Another way of saying this could be, do not rebuke me by means of your anger, or do not rebuke me because you are angry. That is scary. Because if God wanted to rebuke, I'll just use myself as an example. If he wanted to rebuke me every time I had a stupid thought, or I made a mistake, or I sinned, if you want to say that, it would be a bad day. And I think we could all agree with that. Are you familiar with Job? Familiar with Job? His life essentially was a country song at the beginning, right? Lost everything. He lost his animals and his house, and he lost his kids, and he had sores from head to toe. His wife thought he was nuts, just not very supportive. But here's the thing. According to Old Testament, it's called retribution theology, Job must have done something to deserve that, right? But what does it say? Well, do you remember what God himself says about Job? It's a little Bible trivia for you. Yeah, he was moral. He feared God. He was upright. Blameless. God himself said that about Job. So then, of course, you got Job's three friends who did a wonderful job until they opened their mouths. Anyway, so yes. So Job, just like you and me, if we truly got what we deserved, it probably wouldn't be good. So when you're going through a painful experience, physically, emotionally, mentally, there doesn't have to be a cause and effect situation. Maybe it just happened. So what we see here is discipline. If you look at, let me just quote Job 5:17 and 18, where the author says, "Blessed is the one whom God corrects. Do not despise the discipline of the Almighty. For he wounds, but he also binds up. He injures, but his hands also heal." So basically, if you're into tough love, and I don't think there's anything wrong with it, as long as it's not taken too far, then discipline can be a blessing. When I would inevitably get in trouble as a youngster, my dad would always, before he would punish me, he'd say, "Listen, this is going to hurt me a lot more than it's going to hurt you." And I just wanted to look at him and say, "You know what, Dad? I seriously doubt that." So we've got David. Let me just look at, so these next four verses, when he said 2-5, "Have mercy on me, Lord, for I am faint. Heal me, for my bones are in agony. My soul is in deep anguish. How long, Lord, how long?" You see that a lot in the Old Testament. "Turn, Lord, and deliver me. Save me because of your unfailing love. Among the dead, no one proclaims your name. Who praises you from the grave?" Wow. God alone provides mercy. But in this particular situation, we're also dealing with God's grace and certainly his wrath. We hear a David who is lamenting. We all have lamented before. Now, there are some who will tell you, "Well, your faith just isn't strong enough." At the first church I was involved in, we had just a really great man who died of cancer, and he was sick for so long. And it was unfortunate that he had to suffer so much. And I remember someone said to him, "You know, Jack, if you had more faith, if you prayed a little more, yeah, cancer would go away." What? Really? I mean, if anyone believes that, I don't see that at all. That's incredible. This was a man who was as faithful as you can get. When you are lamenting, it's not because you lack faith. It's because you lack answers. David didn't know all the answers, and neither do you or me. But you certainly have times in your life, as I do, you say, "Why, God? Why? Why me? When there's all my neighbors who are seemingly getting every single thing they want, why me?" I don't know. And I love when people try to give you an answer for that, because there is no answer for that. And as we've said a few times already this morning, it's okay not knowing an answer to a question. God does not require understanding, what does he require? Obedience. And even with that, we don't get that right all the time. So this, again, it's the Bible is not formulaic in structure at all, which I think is really neat about that. Someone told me once that I love going through tough times because that's when God really shines through. And I'm thinking, well, half of that sounds great. God shining through. But do you really love going through difficult times? No, of course not. But I understand what they're saying, and it's this. That's when God becomes real. If you've ever been to a 12-step meeting, one thing you hear is that pain is the touchstone to all spiritual growth. Without pain, it's really easy to be faithful. And you walk outside and it's 80 degrees and sunny every day, kind of like it is in California. Now, I'm not saying it's easy for all of us to have faith, but it's the same God when it's 80 and sunny here on a beautiful May Sunday that it is in Chicago or Minnesota when it's 55 below for some unknown reason in January, right? It's the same God when things are going well in your life and when things are falling apart. We'll read the last half of this. I am worn out from my groaning. This is what David says. He's had it. I'm done. All night long, I flood my bed with weeping and drench my couch with tears. My eyes grow weak with sorrow. They fail because of all my foes. Away from me, all you who do evil. For the Lord has heard my weeping. The Lord has heard my cry for mercy. The Lord accepts my prayer. All my enemies will be overwhelmed with shame and anguish. They will turn back and suddenly be put to shame. So in a nutshell, and I know we can't take a deep dive into this today, it's almost like two different writers now. David's saying, I'm miserable, and talks about weeping and crying in her back. I think we all understand that metaphor. I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired, is what he says. And I think David, maybe more than any other man or woman that we see in the Bible, weeping is one thing, but it's not the same thing as faith. It's not the same thing as godly sorrow. And it's certainly not the same thing, although it can lead to, a change of heart. David is described as a man after God's what? After God's own heart. Now, that does not mean David was perfect and did everything the right way. Of course not. But God knows our heart. He knew this king's heart. He was on, whatever you want to say about David, I kind of like Moses. He was very comfortable with God. They were on speaking terms, and I'm not going to say they were buddies or anything because that would be weird, but they had a strong relationship. He had a strong relationship with God. You look at these words, and these are the words of someone who really has been broken. If you've ever been in a situation where you needed to be torn down, I mean, it just had to happen and then reconstructed, that's basically, like, I'll, as an example, someone who I know had recently been to a rehab center for drug and alcohol, they will, if they're doing what they're supposed to do, they will tear you down, limb by limb, piece by piece, only to build you back up. Now, not everybody can handle that. It's not for the faint of heart. But David was going through this and then some. God was restoring him. He was rebuilding him, not in spite of his difficulties, but because of his pain, because of his difficulties. And this is when God's love becomes very real. How are we doing with time? Oh, man. Okay. In conclusion, seriously, though, there's a lot here, and I would recommend go home and take a deeper look at this psalm, because it does end well. It ends, he's being delivered from this destructive behavior. He knows not to necessarily surround himself with awful influences, with negative influences. So let me just say this. When you go out, it's easy to be a Christian inside a church building or a Little Women stage, right? It's easy to be a Christian when you're together. You walk outside, that's when the challenge starts. So my prayer to you is that you just get uncomfortable. Get uncomfortable. Go share your testimony with someone. I've heard from everyone just about here, and what I'm never going to ask you is, hey, what do you think about theology and Matthew's gospel? No. Tell me about you. Who are you? What is your testimony. And I seriously do not think this is all we have in the world. So now, really in closing, what if everything we experience points to a greater reality? You familiar with the Narnia series?
Yes.
The final battle. C.S. Lewis. The final paragraph. I'm sorry, the last battle. It's called the final paragraph of that particular story. Speaking of the Shadowlands, right? Which is very appropriate for disciples living somewhat in the shadows. You've got the lion, Aslan, right? Represents who? Right. Jesus. The Lion of Judah. Those who were loyal and faithful to him were greatly rewarded. The battle is over. They're finally out of the Shadowlands. And now they're in the real world. Let me read this last paragraph and I'll get out of here. The term is over. The holidays have begun. The dream is ended. This is the morning. And as he spoke, he no longer looked to them like a lion. But the things that began to happen after that were so great and beautiful that I cannot write them. And for us, this is the end of all the stories. And we can most truly say that they all lived happily ever after. But for them, it was only the beginning of the real story. All their life in this world and all their adventures in Narnia had only been the cover and the title page. Now, at last, they were beginning chapter one of the great story, which no one on earth has read, which goes on forever, in which every chapter is better than the one before. Think about these words as we go in peace.